Toronto, Canada. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serra.
Thanks for inviting me into your home. Long-haul truck, RV, camper, taxi. Your parents' well-appointed rec room with the simulated wood paneling, electric fireplace, and the painting of dogs playing poker. Your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. This hour, we continue to discuss UFO disclosure and the most recent New York Times article dated July 23, 2020, from Ralph Blumenthal and Leslie Kane, the article titled, No Longer in Shadows, Pentagon's UFO Unit Will Make Some Findings Public, which describes the once covert program now tucked inside the Office of Naval Intelligence, which has discussed mysterious events in classified briefings. Longtime Canadian ufologist Victor Vigiani, executive director of Zealan Communications and Zealan News Network, stays with us. And also joining this hour is Dr. Joseph Buckman, who holds a PhD from the Indiana University Media School and a master's in finance from Purdue. After earning tenure, he left traditional higher education to develop online MBA finance courses for the University of Chicago's UNext program and pursue his dreams of adventure travel. His lifelong interest in cosmology, nucleogenesis, and the possibility of extraterrestrial life led him to serve with six former members of the United States Congress on the 2013 Citizen Hearing on Disclosure in Washington, D.C. His research has been published in a wide variety of college textbooks and presented to the American Psychological Association, the National Association of Broadcasters, TEDx at Burning Man, the Roswell UFO Festival, the Society for Scientific Exploration, Freedom Fest, the Sonoma International Film Festival, the Sundance Film Festival, and the SETI Institute's Contact Cultures of the Imagination Conference in Mountain View, California. Joseph Buckman, welcome aboard. How are you?
It's good to be here. I'm a little bored hearing my whole resume, but other than that, it's great.
Well, you should not be bored. You should be proud.
That was a lot of fun, as was being on with you about 3 years ago when I was running for Congress. It's good to be back with you, Richard.
That's right. On Coast to Coast, you were running as the Libertarian candidate.
I was. Had a great time.
We just shared an hour with Donald R. Schmidt. Let me cover some of the same territory with you, and that is just to get your initial reaction to the July 23rd article from Ralph Blumenthal and Leslie Kane, this long-anticipated follow-up to their December 2017 landmark article.
My reaction was, I don't have to be embarrassed anymore. And I felt that a few times. It was Andrew Siddons who wrote the article on May 3rd, 2013, about the citizens hearing. I'm looking for the headline for that was Visitors from Outer Space, Real or Not, are the focus of discussion in Washington. And I mentioned a couple of weeks ago in a conversation that Victor was a part of that, in my view, that was the tipping point. I think historians will look back on when did we begin, I like to call it the redisclosure process. I mean, disclosure happened in the Roswell Daily Record in 1947. They reported we had flying saucers, and then it was quickly buried. But we're in the process of rediscovering that kind of a headline. And I think that happened on May 3rd. But that was the second article the New York Times had written about the citizens hearing. The first one was full of ridicule and dismissive and continued their previous policy of never taking the UFO subject seriously. This was the first time they took it seriously, so that was an important one. Then you had 2016, where they reported on Hillary Clinton responding to questions, mostly from the Conway Daily Sun. Every candidate who goes through Conway, New Hampshire for the last couple of decades has been asked about UFOs by that print media. And so they mentioned her appearance on Jimmy Kimmel and that she had talked about unidentified aerial phenomenon being the new term. And then they called me and I was quoted saying, hey, if Hillary Clinton is calling it unidentified aerial phenomenon, that means she's been briefed. Everybody else calls it a UFO still. So that was 2016. And then the December 2017 article by Leslie Kane and Ralph Blumenthal was, you know, the next major step where I thought, wow, maybe I'll live long enough that my kids will go, Dad was right about this. And then this most recent article, including the one that followed up the very next day, where they said, do we believe in UFOs? That's the wrong question. That was on July 28th. They came back with a follow-up. It's not a matter of belief. You know, being asked if you believe in UFOs, that takes us into the field of religion. Faith and belief are conclusions based on having no evidence. That's the very definition of faith or belief. The more accurate question that people are starting to ask is, do you find any of the evidence credible? Well, look at those videos from the Nimitz and listen to the audio of the pilots. That's pretty credible. Either that or we have some very highly trained aviators flying the best stuff that we know about who've become rather unhinged. The other tipping point that I felt that reminds me of this article was 2018. I was present in Las Vegas at the Society for Scientific Exploration Conference where Dr. Hal Puthoff gave an amazing presentation. He received a lifetime award for his work with the International Remote Viewing Association. He helped found that, and with UFOs. And he said, some of you may wonder why I'm being given this award for UFOs or UAPs. I've published nothing about that. And I'm going to quote him. I've got it right in front of me here. He said, I've not published anything about unidentified aerial phenomena. Why? Because the program I was involved in the Pentagon and in the intelligence community had been top secret, behind the scenes. Only recently has there been a release of information about the program, so this is the first chance I've had to actually appear before the public and speak about the details of the program. Wow. And then he went on to discuss metamaterials and that most metamaterials are highly classified, but he described his research in trying to analyze some materials that were recovered that were bismuth magnesium layering in the public domain, went to every national lab, went to every asset the United States government has for metamaterials research. Nobody admitted creating this bismuth magnesium layer. Nobody reported knowing why anybody would even want to do that. And our cutting-edge national asset laboratories could not recreate the material, alleged to have been recovered from a crashed alien craft. That was his presentation there in Las Vegas in 2018. I was one of the presenters there, and we had all signed non-disclosure agreements and regarding the presentations we were making at the Society for Scientific Exploration, and there were signs up saying no audio video recording. And I went back to the audio guy at the back of the room because I used to be that guy, right? I had worked in radio in high school and through college, and I said, hey, I'm writing an article about Hal's presentation. I want to be sure I get the quote exactly right. Because they were recording audio and video for later sale by the SSE to, you know, make money. And maybe not every presentation was going to be made available for sale later. And I wasn't sure whether Hal's would. I said, but could you send me that audio? And that way I can be sure I get the quote right. And the guy sent me the whole day's worth that evening in the middle of the night. And so I typed up a transcript of Hal's remarks. And Steve Bassett published it on his website. And for a while, I was afraid I was going to get in trouble. But I actually sent the transcript through Com Kelleher to Hal, and he thanked me for it. So I thought, okay, I guess I'm okay. And I checked with the people who put on the conference, and they said, yeah, that's not the kind of thing we're concerned about. But I felt his remarks were so important regarding the metamaterials and that he was in a classified program involving UFOs that it deserved to be shared. So then we get up to Leslie Keene and Ralph Blumenthal. The big change there for me, and it's something Victor said in the first hour, which I was listening to, the audience of people inside the UFO bubble listen to this stuff very differently than the audience outside. So my brother-in-law worked with the Hubble Space Telescope. He's a science writer. He has an endowed chair at the University of Tennessee. He thinks I'm a total nutcase. Universe is too big. There's no way anybody could get here. All the people reporting UFOs are psychopaths. Joe, give it up. And I know he reads the New York Times every day. So to answer your question, having gone through all that background, I'm waiting to hear from my brother-in-law, Mark. I hope a couple of more things hit where it becomes unavoidable that, you know, Roswell happened. ETs have been engaged with humanity for all of our recorded history. A lot of religion was the misinterpretation of extraterrestrial engagement with people on Earth. I think that's all highly likely. And that we've been attempting to reverse engineer recovered technology. And I think Don's probably right. They haven't even found the on switch yet. And nobody wants to say, we spent $5 trillion and we've gotten nowhere.
You mentioned Hal Puthoff, and I wanted to come back to Eric Davis, who's mentioned in the latest Blumenthal Keene article. And again, the quote here regarding retrievals, and this is a briefing, a classified briefing to a Defense Department agency back in March. He talked about retrievals from, quote, off-world vehicles not made on this earth. Off-world vehicles not made on this earth. This is a classified briefing to a Defense Department agency. To me, that's the crux of the entire article right there. Never mind, you know, Harry Reid saying, well, it might be, we're not sure, it's not, you know, we can't substantiate it. That's it in a nutshell. Wouldn't you agree, Victor?
Yeah, I do agree with you, Richard, on that whole, it's the pivotal point about the long-term and even the immediate implications of what this whole UFO ET issue is all about. It's all about technology. And we can talk about things like, well, we're not alone in the cosmos. Okay, that's fine. The whole consciousness issue, you know, the whole connectivity of all particles of matter in the universe and all of that stuff. But when it comes right down to it, what we're confronted with is a sea change of technology once this stuff gets exposed and gets really kind of fixed up to the point where we can actually work it, if it isn't already being done and we just don't know about it. I'm totally convinced that it's all about technology. I mean, we can talk about extraterrestrials, as I mentioned, and I think as Joseph mentioned earlier, that Hal Puthoff, in a very circuitous way, mentions things like, you know, metamaterials and so on and so forth. Chris Mellon talks about those kinds of things too. And they always talk, as I mentioned to Don and earlier, that they're always talking around the point and not using the E word, the extraterrestrial word. And I'm just wondering why, and I would ask you, Dr. Buckman, why are people so afraid to come out and commit? Is there something holding them back? Or is it a non-disclosure agreement? They just can't say it? Or what's going on there? I literally do not understand why they can come so close to the cloth and then not say that E word.
Well, I think you answered your own question. I had a good friend who became chief medical officer of NASA. We were friends in scouting through the 1970s. He became a physician and then a pilot for the Air Force and wanted to fly on orbit on a space shuttle. But the Challenger exploded, took him out of the queue, and he wound up serving as chief medical officer for NASA in Houston. I visited him shortly before the John Glenn flight. And, you know, he asked me what I wanted to do. I said, well, I want to go, you know, see the moon rocks. He said, yeah, I can't get you in that room. I said, well, let's go to a simulator and practice landings at the Cape. And he said, well, I could do that, but I'd probably get in trouble. Is there anything else you'd like to do? I said, well, I'd like to sit in the flight surgeon's chair in mission control. So he said, that's no problem. So he badged me through one of the two mirrored mission controls. They had two identical current ones. It wasn't the restored original Apollo one. But we sat there talking, and outside of that mission control room was a standard government bulletin board, and they had a weekly world news article, Bill Clinton greets space alien. And we kind of laughed about it. And I said, well, Roger, it's not like we have flying saucers shadowing our shuttles on orbit. And he just stopped talking, and he said, look, before I answer that question, I have three questions for you. And I said, what? He said, do you think I've ever lied to you? And I said, no. I mean, we're both Eagle Scouts, and I don't think you've ever lied. So do you think there's anything anybody could pressure me in a way that would cause me to lie to others? And I said, no, Roger. I mean, I think you take life on Earth as kind of a testing ground. I knew he's kind of a fundamentalist Christian, and there's the rewards in a life to come by being honest with others. No, I don't think there's anything anybody could do to force you to lie. And he said, well, my third question is, where do you want to go to lunch? I said, well, I want to go to that place in the Right Stuff, that Chinese place where they all – he said, oh, that place is terrible. It's shut down. I'll take you somewhere where we might see an astronaut having lunch. And we didn't. But over lunch, he said, look, don't ever ask me about that again. You got to understand, to get this kind of job, you have to sign certain little pieces of paper. And as much as I might like to talk about some things, even with my own wife, if I were to do so, I'd go to a place worse than Leavenworth. She would lose the health care benefits, the pension. And so don't ask me about that again. So I think that these non-disclosure agreements that people in the military contractors, or I think Don was right in the previous hour, the corporate gatekeepers that have taken charge of this issue to get it out from under any threat of the Freedom of Information Act or whatever, I think those legal contracts are pretty freaky frightening. So back in 2008, when I ran for Congress the first time, and then again in 2017, the main part of my platform was we need the United States Congress to pass whistleblower protection. Reporting a crime by our government should never be a crime. We need to have protection for waste and fraud and criminal activity and the ET issue. And then after we've protected whistleblowers, eliminate all the NDA restrictions about anything involving waste or fraud or criminal activity or ETs. And then let's hold open hearings. I think that's the path to cure what is the disease in America that's corrupting our institutions. And I think the TV ratings for those kind of hearings would be huge. And I'd like my friend Roger to be freed to talk about it. And another friend who passed away a year ago, August 5th, just in a couple of days, a real American hero, guy who served in Vietnam. He was second in command at Fort Bliss. He was there when Columbia landed that one time. Eventually became chief briefing officer for the Joint Chiefs. And when I asked him about UFOs, his answer was almost identical to my friend Roger. Can't talk about it. And not only can't talk about it, but got very, very emotional. And so, yeah, Victor, I think you answered your own question. I think these people are afraid of going to a place worse than Leavenworth. Why that's a secret, I don't know. So at the SSE meeting, after Hal's, Dr. Puthoff's presentation, I went up to him and I said, Dr. Puthoff, and he kind of knew me. He had talked about the citizens hearing and how impressed he was with Bob Salas and UFOs and nukes. And I said to him, Dr. Puthoff, if you don't have to tell me what the secret is, but tell me, I'm a libertarian. I believe in minimal government and total transparency. But if I were to be fully read into this program and understand what the reasons are that it's been kept secret, do you think I would agree with them? Even coming from that place, is the reason so powerful that I would say, yeah, we've got to keep the secret from the bulk of humanity? And he kind of looked at the carpet, and then he looked up at me and said, well, Joe, I just don't think the reasons are as powerful, I think was the word. I can't remember exactly, but I don't think the reasons are as powerful as the gatekeepers seem to think they are. I'm like, gatekeepers? Who are the gatekeepers? but I didn't ask that question. I was just sort of stunned. I don't think the reasons are as powerful or as strong as the gatekeepers think they are. But apparently there's, you know, some secret about why it might be in our best interest to keep it secret. And I've thought about that for years. And the best I can come up with is maybe the ETs look at us like we look at a caterpillar in a chrysalis. And, you know, if you help the caterpillar out of the chrysalis state, it'll die. It needs to struggle out of the cocoon to develop the strength in its wings to be able to fly as a butterfly. And maybe there's ETs out there looking at the people on Earth saying, yeah, if we try to help them, they're never going to grow up. They're never going to stop being violent. We got to let them sit in their own dirty nest for a while longer and see if they can work their way out of it.
All right, Dr. Buckman, stay put. Victor, you do the same. We'll come back on the other side and continue to discuss disclosure and the latest New York Times article on the secret Pentagon UFO unit. The Conspiracy Show continues right after this. Don't go away.
Thank you. providing the evidence and letting you draw your own conclusions. This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarant.
Welcome back. Dr. Joseph Buckman, Victor Vigiani stays with us. Gentlemen, I want to ask you, getting back to the New York Times article, and the idea that this program didn't stop in 2012, it has continued, and there weren't many of us who believed that it stopped in 2012. Luis Elizondo said as much. And yet, though, we know very little about this group's, let's say, post-2017 operations. We have the Tic Tac video from the Nimitz in 2004. That's 15, 16 years ago. When can we expect, might we expect to see more gun camera video, more startling Navy pilot encounters with these objects?
Well, I just in terms of other information, Richard, I cannot believe that there are not other kinds of pieces of information, be they pilot briefing records, be they gun camera videos that have yet to be released. There has to be a whole wealth of information that has been, compiled by that program. I don't think we've seen a tenth of what is possibly there. And I have every reason to believe that eventually, if the waves keep on hitting the shore as they have been over the past, since 2017, we are bound to find out more about these things, because the lubrication of this issue has been set in stone. As far as I'm concerned, we are being prepared in a way that it's almost like those within the UFO community have been sort of prepared for all of this, and we think, oh well, yes, that's just a natural outgrowth of what we know. And the other side of that coin is how that information will be interpreted by the general public, by the media, and by all of the other players in the global theater that's very interested in this. Those that are very hostile and skeptical about this information will, I think, be rendered almost helpless in the face of what is yet to come. At least that's my take on it.
Dr. Buckman?
I'll go back to what Dr. Puthoff said during that same presentation in Las Vegas at the Society for Scientific Exploration. He said, quote, "We now have three high-quality F-18 videotapes of unidentified aerial phenomenon encounters. Previously languishing in the Pentagon servers, nobody doing that much with them. These are still being generated. One of the tapes is from 2016 off the east coast of the United States. There are a lot more tapes. Hopefully we will get a lot more of them posted." So I went up to him a different time than the one I just told you about with the gatekeeper comment. And I said, "Hey, what's on the other tapes? And, why aren't they all being released? Well, you say there's a lot more of them." And he said, "Well, actually, they show a video that's very similar to the three that have been released, but they're kind of hung up because of metadata about the locations where they were shot, some of which is not apparently what they want to release publicly. So I assume maybe we were in foreign airspace, or maybe we're at altitudes that are classified or whatever. But now it's been, 2 years and a couple of months since he made those comments about a lot more tapes. And we use the word tapes. It's not tapes. He mentions they're on Pentagon servers. This is all digitized video that probably never saw any kind of analog media at all. And I would assume even it's downloaded onto those servers, as the pilots are flying, even maybe in addition to be recorded somewhere in the electronics of the plane itself. So yeah, where are those? And why are they still stuck? I think what happened was somebody at the Pentagon goofed, and maybe they took advantage of knowing that somebody was goofing. They get some of the stuff out, and then I suspect the Pentagon pulled it back. And I suspect they wish they hadn't let go of what these guys apparently got legitimately, but maybe not by double checking or bringing a lot of attention to what they were doing legitimately. So,
Luis Elizondo seems to think that, you know, now that they are no longer hiding in the shadows, as he puts it, there will be new transparency. But how do we know there will be new transparency? And I mean, unless we start to see these additional video tape or testimony or documentation, how will we know they're being transparent?
I think what's exciting is how Hal began his presentation was, I was part of a classified program, but information has now been released, and so I'm free to talk. I doubt anybody at the Pentagon called him up and said, hey, you're free to talk now, right? And so there's other patriots, if you want. This is, by the way, Don and Tom Carey write about how heavy a burden this is for our public servants, the honorable people in the United States military who have been ordered to keep this secret. It is a heavy burden. I know my friend would have loved to have told his wife, both of them, for example. And so when they start seeing examples of people talking about things that maybe they think they shouldn't talk about and having no ill consequence occur, you might start seeing more Eric Davises and Hal Putoffs and Chris Mellons and others begin to feel that, and hey, it's safe here. It's like the chicken and egg problem. You know, nobody wants to be first. And then at some point, that floodgate will open, and we'll get a ton of testimony. The other thing I'd say is it's not just about this New York Times article, like that happened on X date. Now print media have websites. Public are invited to comment on the articles on those websites. So I would encourage people who are interested in the New York Times article, yeah, go read the article, but then find the comment section on the Times, and you'll find that Ralph Blumenthal has been answering questions from readers. And I just saw where Leslie Keen posted earlier tonight that Ralph was interviewed on a Toronto radio station, I guess one of your competitors, 1010, earlier today, in a 10-minute interview. And so the story is not a static thing anymore. It's a living, breathing thing. And I would, as somebody who got a PhD from the media school, if I learned anything at all, I'd suspect there's dozens to hundreds of other media outlets that don't want the New York Times to get the next scoop. They want to get to it before the Times. So now there's who knows how many reporters out there and other resources from other media that are like, we got to get this out before the Times does their third big article.
Victor, over to you.
Yeah, I think that when you mentioned the radio station 1010, I know it well enough to say that if Radio 1010 is interested in this, just by the nature of its conservative base, you can be well assured that they are in the race to find out exactly how important this issue is. Earlier this week, they did have another spot on the UFO issue. So when radio stations like that, and even more conservative newspapers and media outlets begin to pick up all of this information and sort of shed the skepticism and deal with the hostility that some people are dealing with regard to this issue, the more it becomes an easier task to present people information that's a little bit beyond the curve. So we're sort of in a bit of a bind here. We don't go and talk to the public just yet about, let's say, for example, the Eric Davis information with respect to Vice Admiral Wilson. We don't lead with that. It's like in a card game, you might not lead with your strength right away. We've got to go back to more basic information so the public can really understand and come to grips as to what the history of this issue is all about and how it's evolved over the years. And good journalism, I think, will play a good role in that. I don't know what your comment would be on that, Joseph.
I absolutely agree. I just pulled it up. It was 3 hours ago. Leslie wrote, Ralph Blumenthal, my partner for the New York Times reporting, did a short interview on News Talk 1010 in Toronto today, and then she links to the audio that you can play back if you have any kind of internet connection or cell phone access or whatever. And here's Ralph still talking about it. And then yesterday, it was Chris Mellon on CNN. Basically, you know, and here you got Chris Mellon, you know, formerly of Defense Intelligence, talking about President Trump's comments about Roswell. I never thought I'd live to see this kind of thing happening. I thought maybe my grandkids will realize that granddad wasn't a UFO nut. But to have a former guy from the Pentagon who was in Defense Intelligence on CNN talking about the president's comments about whether he should declassify information about Roswell or not, we're in a different world than we were a year ago.
Would you imagine, just for a second, you mentioned Captain Bob Salas earlier.
Yes.
And the information that he and the other launch commanders have signed affidavits on in terms of the nuclear missile shutdown incidents in, I believe it was 1965 and onwards. There's a lot of talk about what happened, you know, in the Nimitz and the Roosevelt and the Tic Tac videos and everything, and the whole issue of national security. I mean, that's all fine and good, and you know, that's going to propel this whole issue forward in a way that we've never seen before. But talk to us for a moment about when the general public gets the, I'll use the word truthful, or the accurate information about UFOs coming down, hovering over missile silos and shutting down a dozen of them, knowing full well that the United States can be considered as virtually helpless against any of these vehicles, if you want to extend that whole logical argument with respect to national security. I mean, that's got to be a game breaker.
Dr. Buckman, I'll get you to hold off and we'll answer that on the other side. And, Victor, you stay put as well. The Conspiracy Show will continue right after this. My name is Richard Serrett.
Take a look around. What do you really see? This is where you can tell all about it. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett.
All right, before the break, Victor, you had asked Dr. Buckman about UFOs over U.S. nuke sites, and Senator Rubio sort of alluded to this in saying that he was telling a CBS affiliate in Miami this month he was primarily concerned about reports of unidentified aircraft over American military bases. Now, I'm not sure if he's going back as far as 1965 or 67, you know, when Bob Salas was writing about these incidents, but it's clearly or clear that Rubio is saying, okay, folks, this is now a national security issue. So, Dr. Buckman, please weigh in.
I find it comforting that there might be some highly advanced, technologically capable life that's out there that's really interested in shutting down all our nukes, at least the nuclear missiles. Victor asked what I thought the bulk of humanity would do, or how it would change once it becomes incontrovertible that we're not alone in the cosmos and that some kind of technologically superior beings are here and maybe have been here for a while. I think that the model for that is what happened with the Copernican Revolution. You know, most of human history, we imagined that there was the Earth, and above the Earth was the heavens, and below the Earth was a place that we called Hades or Hell. And depending on how you lived on Earth, you either got to float up into heaven and be with your Creator, or if you didn't do well, then you went into Hades. At least that was the, you know, the Western culture's kind of view of things. But you saw similar views in other Native American and other traditions, where there was the sky above and the earth below. And we were the center of everything, and everything rotated around us. And you had these weird things that looked like stars that did these perturbations where they did little loops in the sky, and there was efforts to sort of explain how that could be happening. But what made a lot more sense was that the earth, along with the other planets, were all orbiting the sun. And that was a very humbling moment for humanity, especially for our religious leaders that thought, you know, God created life on this one spot. The idea of some sort of life throughout the cosmos was ridiculed then, but perhaps less so when we realized we weren't really the center of everything. I think it would be an extraordinarily humbling moment to realize that that we're kind of the primitives who've just been struggling to reach a point of maybe being invited to join a greater community of beings throughout the cosmos, and that we're just the new kids on the block. We're the least advanced, perhaps, of those that might be getting that kind of party invitation. And I think that kind of humility would be a good thing. Hubris on Earth is giving us wars over natural resources, over arbitrary boundaries that define nation states. And we really ought to grow up and unite as people who look at spaceship Earth as perhaps a little more fragile than we do, and as a planet to be cared for, that we're borrowing from our grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren, and it doesn't really belong to us. And I'm hoping that you know, that that's the kind of philosophical change that will occur. It also motivates me to run for office as a libertarian, because the libertarian political philosophy is one that I find in alignment with that. When I went to Steve Bassett's X conferences beginning in 2008, one of the things I said there was, look, I'm utterly confident that the only Democrats and the only Republicans in the entire cosmos or on this one backward planet. There's no Democrats or Republicans out there. But the core of libertarian political philosophy is natural law. Natural law says you don't have the right to initiate aggression against others, and you have the right of self-ownership of your own physical body. Nobody can make you a slave. There's no right to that anyway. And that you don't have the right to initiate violence. And I said, if they're here, they got access to pretty incredible technology that could have been used to blow each other up. The fact that they're here means they didn't do that. Carl Sagan, by the way, made this same kind of argument back in the 70s for funding SETI. It'll tell us about our future. So if they're here and they haven't used aggression, then the universe is teeming with libertarians. The only place there's a lack of them is on this one planet. And I really believe that. It's part joke, but it's part of really what motivates me. I'd like to see a far more peaceful planet Earth. I'd like to see a place where we really care for each other and we don't take things that don't belong to us, and we reward productivity and innovation and the right to keep the fruits of one's productive activity and encourage charity, and we don't let anyone starve or go harmless. I think once Earth looked like that, the ETs would feel a lot better about dropping by. Right now, like Stan Friedman used to say, if you imagined a benevolent, benign to benevolent extraterrestrial writing a junior high school report about planet Earth, you know, primary activity, destroying each other, primary economic activity, developing ever more effective ways to destroy each other. I don't think an ET wants to drop by planet Earth any more than I want to go to you know, to Portland, Oregon last week and be in the middle of that fight, or Aleppo or Baghdad. I don't, you know, right. There's places on Earth I don't want to travel to. I think Earth is that dark corner that maybe the ETs would like us to calm down a bit before they feel like coming over for tea.
All right. We'll take one final time out. Come back with Dr. Joseph Buckman, Victor Vigiani, and maybe your calls, time permitting. The Conspiracy Show. My name is Richard Serrett. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett.
Dr. Buckman, in your estimation, how close are we to some sort of official disclosure? Have articles like this most recent one, have they moved the needle?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the other reason it's hard to prophesy how far we are from disclosure is the aliens could do it anytime they want. If indeed they're here, show up. And I think maybe they tried to in July of 1952, 1954. When was the big Washington flap?
That was 52, I believe.
Yeah. 52, I think. You know, when I went through the National Archives, when I was in Washington, D.C., maybe after the citizens hearing in 2013, I actually purchased, and I have it framed here in my office, the newspaper headlines. They have the picture of the discs around the Capitol building for sale in the National Archives. Is that a joke? Is that, you know, so I don't know. I know my friend Steve Bassett is concerned that perhaps in an effort seeing that he may not get reelected, Donald Trump might try to reveal whatever he's been briefed on. I doubt it's everything. Could come up in a debate. I saw where Bryce Zabel was writing an open letter to Joe Biden, encouraging him to be prepared for Donald Trump to mention aliens in presidential debates. What a world we live in. The other thing I say, I think for any autodidactically inclined human being who's studying this issue, disclosure's already happened. Look at the evidence. The only people who dismiss UFOs out of hand as nutcases are people like my brother-in-law, who's a, you know, an endowed chair, tenured position at the University of Tennessee. You know, he hasn't looked at the evidence. He just, or Seth Shostak. You know, Seth and I have had many conversations now going back to 2014 when I first presented at the Contact Conference. And you know, I know some people think Seth is hiding this great secret that he's been read in on. My impression is those scientists at SETI are so siloed into their narrow fields of study, they just dismiss. They won't look at Travis Walton. They won't look at Roswell. And by the way, the best book on Roswell just came out. I wrote the foreword to it. Came out a month ago. Don and Tom's book, Roswell, The Ultimate Cold Case. Terrific place to, you know, if you're looking for gifts to give people as they begin to get interested in this and ask to read more about it, I would give them Roswell, The Ultimate Cold Case is a great place to start. The other book that I really like, and I noticed this was on in the office of my Pentagon briefing officer friend, was Gordon Cooper's book, A Leap of Faith. He was in Mercury, the last Mercury mission, last human being to ever orbit the Earth alone was astronaut Gordon Cooper. And he writes about the Foo Fighters that he experienced as a pilot in World War II. Clearly non-human created something. We thought it was German. The Germans thought it was us. The Russians thought it was who knows. But Gordon Cooper also wrote about being at Edwards when they did a missile test and a lenticular-shaped, hard-sided craft flew circles around the missile. They got great military camera footage of it. Gordon looked at the developed footage, saw, yeah, there's a flying saucer on there, sent it off to Washington, D.C., disappeared. It should have become part of Project Blue Book, disappeared. And here you have an American hero, World War II veteran, guy who flew in Gemini and Mercury, should have walked on the moon, but retired out of NASA early, writing that he had film of a flying saucer. Where's that film? Let's add that to what's been released. So yeah, it could happen any day. You know, and our Leslie and Ralph, we know they have a lot more that they would have liked perhaps to have published, but the editors you know, winnowed that way down to the hardest stuff, and they're going to continue researching. And, you know, there's Pulitzer Prizes in this for the next big breakthrough.
Victor, what do you think it could be revealed in the next article?
Great question. If I were to predict anything, and knowing Leslie, I've been following her for many, many years, and her seminal book, UFOs, Generals, and Government Officials Go on the Record about UFOs. If she's one of the people who are instrumental in breaking this, and I know that Leslie has moved into other areas of sort of speculation in terms of the more transcendental aspects of our consciousness, she's moved into that area. And although she's not really come forward and mentioned the word extraterrestrials in any of her work that I know of, she is betwixt and between. So I think what might come out, if Leslie has anything to do with it, might be the great hint here. And as I mentioned with Don and just now earlier in the program, that she just might be the first official journalist who's really plugged into this to come out, as much as we may not think it, and sort of mention the E word in a way that tantalizes people to understand that her work is not just behind the scenes in terms of what the UFO craft are all about and the gun camera film and all of that, that there is a more ethereal aspect to what these things are. And I think Leslie may convince these editors who have really truncated some of the information to go in that direction. And it just could be part of the next, if not the next, maybe the one after that, if I could say so, where she'll broach the issue of the more transcendental way this phenomenon needs to be interpreted by humanity. I think that's her next leap. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if that just might be the next thing she broaches when she writes.
We've been talking about the sea change in the treatment that the media has given this subject. Joseph, you mentioned the treatment from the media after the citizens' hearing, and again, it was the old tongue in cheek. But that's all finished now. That's going forward. What do we expect to happen in the media? Do you, for example, anticipate, I don't know, will there be a UFO section in some of the major newspapers? What do you see happening with the media?
Well, that's something that I've been pushing for years, Richard. And I think that given a good journalistic instinct, there are a couple of people I know here in Toronto that are really plugged into this whole issue. I don't know if people are familiar with the work of one of the star reporters, Vinay Menon. I've had correspondence with him, and he's written several great articles on the UFO issue. He just had one, last week, where he talked about the same things you and I are talking about. And he mentions Chris Mellon. He mentions the To the Stars Academy. This is something unheard of in Toronto newspaper. And if someone has an opportunity to say, listen, let's put instead of horoscopes, let's put it or in the opinion section, let's write about it's time to talk seriously about UFOs and put up a regular column by someone who really knows what they're doing. And we're not that far away from that type of journalistic endeavor, at least here up in Canada. Anyways, I think we're on the cusp of that.
Your thoughts, Joseph?
I think we're also in a position where there are people, the gatekeepers that Hal referred to, whoever they are. And you just need one of them to choose to claim their place in history to get to a point where they feel they have nothing to lose. Maybe it's an end-of-life opportunity where the consequences that they fear for violating the NDAs or the contracts that they've signed, or the reality that they see other people like Hal and Chris Mellon and Dr. Eric Davis, pushing that horizon out a little bit and showing that it's safe out here. The water's fine. Come on in. We just need one of these people, to come forward with some incontrovertible evidence and present it to, someone like Leslie or another reporter who maybe they have a personal connection with. And the tipping point will occur. And I think in the post-disclosure world, I'm hoping humanity on Earth will unite, be a little more humble, see ourselves all on Spaceship Earth, be curious about what's out there and start looking to the sky and with wonder and excitement and living into a future of travel among the stars, even for our grandchildren or great-grandchildren or whatnot. And then I think we'll also look back on the last 70 years and say, oh, yeah, they did a terrible job of covering it up. Look at all those people who were telling the truth. The government can't keep a secret is probably what we'll say looking back on it. It's only in the current environment inside the aquarium swimming in the water of all this that we can't see the truth so clearly. But I bet the light of history will say, oh, yeah, it was out there. There was Bob Salas, and there were the Jesse Marcel talking about Roswell. They couldn't keep a secret. They couldn't cover it up. And that'll be funny because it sure seems like it's impossible to discern what's truth from what's the fiction surrounding this issue right now in the moment.
Joseph, are you running again under the Libertarian ticket?
Not this year. I kind of wish I had was because it would be a great opportunity to raise the issue. I would encourage everybody out there to look at running as a Green Party candidate or a Libertarian Party. You get on there, and it's a great way to get some media exposure for things that you care about. And certainly this is an issue I care about. And I'm so grateful that you invited me to be on this show tonight.
Well, we're thankful that you spent some time with us, and I look forward to speaking with you again. And Victor, as always, Zealand News, Zealand Communications, and people can click on your name and that'll take on my website, strangeplanet.ca, and that'll take you right to your blog spot. Thank you so much, gentlemen, both.
Anytime.
Thank you, Richard.
All right. Thank you. Back next week with a brand new program. In the meantime, don't be afraid. There's nothing concealed that won't be revealed and nothing hidden that won't be made known. What you hear in the dark, speak in the light. What I say in a whisper, proclaim from the housetops. Move over, Aphrodite. I'm coming home. Good night.